the number one killer of any kind of relationship is unmet expectations. Think about it. Unmet expectations. Whether we're talking about a work relationship where an employee doesn't meet the expectation that they come to work when they're scheduled, that they're on time, and that they do a good job, or maybe it's the other way. Maybe the employer doesn't meet the expectations of the employee. In any event, unmet expectations, relationship over. Or maybe we're talking about a friendship where the expectation of confidentiality is not met by a friend who posts something on social media that was supposed to be private. That'll blow up a relationship, right? Maybe it's a marriage relationship. We hear a lot about people with irreconcilable differences, problems in communication. Maybe there are money problems. All of those boil down to some form of unmet expectation, right? There's another relationship or another family of relationships that's particularly vulnerable to unmet expectations, and that's church relationships, and particularly the relationship of a pastor with the congregation. Many, many of those relationships have been destroyed because of unmet expectations. I want to share with you this morning, whatever relationship we're talking about, I want to share with you three steps to keeping your relationships alive. If unmet expectations is the number one killer of any relationship, then these are three steps that you can take to keep all of your relationships alive. All right, step number one. Know your expectations. The title of this teaching this morning is, What Do You Expect? So know your expectations. Now, I'm a little bit of what I call a word nerd. I think I may have mentioned that before. But by that, I mean, when I'm wanting to understand a concept, I like to look up the definitions of words. Even if I just type it into the Google search bar, there's usually some kind of a brief, you know, definition that comes up from some dictionary that Google uses. And those are often very helpful in clarifying my thinking about a topic. So I did that with expectation. An expectation is a strong belief about how someone or something will or ought to be. That's a mouthful, but that's an expectation. Expectation is a strong belief about how someone or something will be or ought to be. And embedded in that definition are two different kinds of expectations. One kind I call prescriptive expectations. That means there's a should in there. That means this is the way it should be. That's prescriptive. I'm deciding how it should be, right? Now, each of these kinds of relationships, the prescriptive one and the one I'm about to describe in a minute, which is descriptive, have a healthy expression and a toxic expression. Now, a healthy expression of a prescriptive expectation would be something like, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. That's the way it should be, right? Those are Jesus' words in John 13:35. A new commandment I give you, that you love one another. Prescriptive, healthy. The Old Testament has 10 very healthy prescriptive expectations. We know them as the Ten Commandments, right? Also examples of healthy prescriptive expectations. But prescriptive expectations can become toxic. A toxic example is when you use the word should, there's automatically a moral judgment attached to it, right? If I say it should be that way, then if it's not, it's wrong, right? Now, if Jesus said, love one another, and I'm not loving, then I am wrong. That's not toxic, that's just true. But it becomes toxic when we attach the should to things that shouldn't have a should attached to them. We make a should out of a I wish, or we make a should out of a I want. It can become toxic. When that moral judgment is attached to the expectation and it's not warranted because it's not a moral issue, it becomes toxic. It can lead to entrenchment, taking sides, and harsh, harsh conflict on moral grounds or else on biblical grounds. How many entrenched battles have we witnessed on biblical grounds when maybe the should shouldn't have been there? In the last church we pastored in Nebraska, there was a gentleman in the congregation by the name of John. I had a high regard for John. I respected him a great deal. And a decision that he made only increased my respect, even though it made me sad. John was invited to join the board of the church, and he declined. And that made me sad because he had a lot of wisdom. But part of the reason that he declined, actually the reason he declined, was because he just couldn't sign off on the church's doctrinal statement when it came to eschatology. Eschatology is the study of end times. You know, what's going to happen in the future? And this church's doctrinal statement was written in such a way that it was very prescriptive. You need to believe it the way we do, or else you're wrong. And he happened, it didn't say that, but he happened to believe that even though he didn't disagree with that interpretation, he didn't believe it was fair or right to say that's the only way you could understand the biblical record. And he didn't want to get into that fight. And so he declined joining the board. Made me sad, but it did increase my respect for him because he didn't want to get into the toxicity of a prescriptive relationship that had an illegitimate moral judgment attached to it. So that's the one kind, the prescriptive kind. The other kind of expectation that's in that definition I shared is what I call descriptive. It's not a should, but it's a will. This is how I believe it will be. My expectation is just describing how I think reality will be. And there are also healthy expressions of that. For example, Susie, my wife, right over there, beautiful. She's too introverted for me to ask her to wave, but she's right over there. She has an expectation that whenever I get up in the morning, whenever I leave her presence to go almost anywhere, whenever I return from almost anywhere, whenever we go to bed at night, and many times for no reason at all, I am going to kiss her. She has that expectation. In fact, she also has an expectation that I am going to abide by my self-imposed 30-second rule. Now, the 30-second rule states, and it only applies to me, the 30-second rule states that if I kiss you goodbye and I don't leave within 30 seconds, the first kiss expires. And I owe you another one. Guess how often it takes me longer than 30 seconds to leave? I get a lot of kisses. So that's a good expectation. That's how she expects reality to be. It's a descriptive expectation, and it's positive. And descriptive expectations are positive, too, because they're a lot more flexible. When I'm just thinking about how it will be, there's also the, I wish it would be, it could be, there's hope, there's all of those kinds of things in there. And descriptive expectations are more flexible, more easily able to change with reality. So that's healthy. But descriptive expectations also have a toxic side. And they become toxic when we hold on to them. They kind of just turn into a should, don't they, when that happens. If I hold on to, if Susie said, he better kiss me. I wanted to test this the other day. I came in, gave her a kiss, and I said, hey, what would you think if I came home sometime and didn't kiss you? She go, I want to know what's wrong. Right? So if the here's how it will be turns into a here's how it should be, or if I just hold on to my expectation of reality too hard, then when that expectation isn't met, I'm disappointed. And disappointment is kind of the top of the roller coaster first hill, you know what I'm talking about? That plunges very quickly into bitterness. And that's why unmet expectations are so toxic in relationships. So, know your expectations. Well, how do you know what your expectations are? I want you to do an exercise with me, all right? Think of a person, anybody. It could be at work, it could be at home, it could be in the church, it could be anywhere. Just think of a person. You got a person in mind? Raise your hand when you have a person in mind. I'm serious about you participating. All right, okay. You got a person in mind. Now, I want you to think about any interaction you might have, not one you have had. I want you to think about any interaction you might have with that person, all right? Now, play that scenario a little bit. This is something called scenario planning. Play that scenario a little bit in your mind. I'll give you a second. Now, think to yourself, how did that scenario play out? And when you observe how that imagined scenario played out, that says something about your expectations. Right? That's a really good exercise to use for any relationship. Scenario planning is what people do when they do drills for disaster response and things like that. If this happened, when I was working at a local major hospital, they would do different disaster plans. So they would set up, okay, here's the disaster, go! And we had to figure out what to do in case that disaster happened. Now, not every scenario is a disaster, especially in relationships, we hope. But scenario planning, that little exercise is really a good idea. But you need to understand, you need to know what you expect in all of your relationships. That's step one. What do you expect? Know your expectations. Step two is to manage your expectations. Now, we manage expectations in order to eliminate the toxicity from our relationships. That's why we want to manage our expectations. Now, in business, we manage expectations by over-promising and I knew I was going to get that wrong. You're laughing, you caught it. By under-promising and over-delivering. The other one does create expectations, but they're a horrible outcome. That's when you destroy a relationship through expectation, unmet expectations. But if you under-promise and over-deliver in business, that's a way of managing customer expectations and managing employee or employer expectations. So that's how we manage. But I'm not talking about managing somebody else's expectations right now. I'm talking about managing my own expectations. And a big part of managing your expectations is understanding where they come from. Where did I get this expectation? Well, now, Susie, for example, her expectation comes from over 40 years of experience. I've kissed her every time. We even had a sign over our bed in China that said, "Always kiss me goodnight." I love that sign. She found it and she put it up there. But she's had 40 years of experience that have set that expectation that I'm going to give her a kiss every chance I get. 40 years, that's a lot of kissing. I even gave her a kiss before I came up here to talk. That's just how it works. Other expectations, though, come from your study of Scripture. I would hope so. I would hope we get a lot of our expectations about how things could, should, will be from our study of Scripture. Some of our expectations, though, come from what we've heard from other people. Now, that starts to get a little bit less reliable. In fact, that's pretty dangerous. If I'm setting my expectation about you based on what I heard about from this person, how reliable is that expectation? Other expectations come from MSU. Now, I'm from the state of Michigan. I'm not talking about Michigan State University. I'm talking about making stuff up. A lot of times we have no idea what to expect, and because nature abhors a vacuum, all kinds of ideas come rushing into our mind when we have no idea what to expect, and we just make stuff up. And we set expectations based on our own thinking about how we suppose it might be or might ought to be. So understand where your expectations come from. That's the first real important part of managing those expectations. And it may be because of the whole making stuff up and the toxicity of relationships that William, of expectations and relationships that William Shakespeare said, expectation is the root of all heartache. Well, I don't necessarily agree with that. I would agree that unmet expectation is the root of all heartache. But expectations are not all bad. We just talked about those prescriptive, healthy expectations, right? Maybe another way of thinking about this that will be helpful is if you have an expectation that's here and reality turns out to be up here, we call that a surprise, right? Many years ago before Susie and I were married, we were dating long distance. I lived in Chicago, I was going to school, and she lived 3 hours away in Bloomington, Illinois, and she was working. And one afternoon, Susie came home from work, and she was visiting with her parents, and she was in the kitchen with her mom, and her mom asked her to go over to the cabinet under the counter there to get one of the pots that she needed to make dinner. And so Susie went over to the counter and opened up the cabinet and to get that pot, and she didn't find the usual array of pots and pans under the cabinet. She found me. Her parents and I had conspired to surprise her for that weekend visit. And before she got home from work, we hurriedly took the pots and pans out and hid them away, took the shelf out and hid it all away, and I curled up and crawled inside that cabinet. I don't think I could do that today. But I got inside that cabinet. When she opened, you should have seen the look on her face. I was no pot nor pan. So when reality is better than what you expect, we call that a surprise. And so most of the time when we think of surprise, it's positive. The connotation of surprise is usually positive. Surprise party, you know, this was a pleasant surprise, or my boyfriend's in the cabinet instead of the pot or pan. These are positive surprises. But when your reality is less than your expectation, what do we call that? Disappointment. Exactly. Another story about Susie. So, we spend a lot of time together. So, we went to a favorite burger place the other day. And this place literally advertises on the wall 40 million different ways that you can get their burgers prepared. Right? You would think one of them is well done. Susie likes her meat to be like shoe leather. Literally, if we go to Texas Roadhouse, I order because I want to make sure that they know the little, whatever that littlest steak is, butterflied and burnt, that's how she wants it. I can't tell you how many times managers have actually come out and said, "Are you sure you want it like that?" And we say, "Yeah, we're sure." She likes it like that. Like those little chew toys that the dogs go on. But that's how she likes her meat. And so we went to this burger place, 40 million different ways you can get it, and she just, very simple, "Well done, please." Well, this particular day, we were just going to eat in the car, not inside the restaurant. So I sat in the car with her while we waited for it to get done. It's kind of a quasi-fast food place. So then I went in, and I got the burger, came back out, sat in the car. She took a bite into that burger, all excited about having this delicious burger. She was hungry. Pink. Pink on the inside. That is when your reality is less than your expectation. She was disappointed. And when we talk about managing expectations and the toxicity, we're trying to minimize those disappointments, right? We're trying to mitigate the negative emotions associated with that kind of disappointment. Some people try to manage their expectations simply by lowering them. And their philosophy is, if I lower my expectations, I'll never be disappointed. And if something good happens, it'll be a surprise. But doesn't lowering your expectations constitute a disappointment in and of itself? There are philosophies out there that teach their followers that the way that you have a good life is to eliminate expectation altogether. Just live in the moment and let it unfold with no expectation. But that's not realistic. And it also doesn't acknowledge the fact that some expectations are very, very good. We talked about that a minute ago, but let me just drill into it for a second. There is a psychological effect known as the Pygmalion effect. Has anybody ever heard of that? The Pygmalion effect? So that says that people will tend to rise to your level of expectation. So if I have expectations about you that are positive, that impacts the way that I behave toward you. And the way that I behave toward you affects the way that you react and the way that you perform. And that affects the way that you behave toward me, which then reinforces my expectation. So it's a circle, right? So a positive expectation can create a positive outcome. There's an opposite to the Pygmalion effect, and that's called the Golem effect. It's the same cycle, only negative. Let me give you an example. In our business, we do hospital housekeeping. So we clean hospital space. And as you might imagine, there is a lot of inspection of work that happens, right? So our folks go in and work hard and clean, and then we have people who come in behind and inspect the work. Supervisors, quality control inspectors, things like that. So if a supervisor believes, it starts with beliefs, if the supervisor believes that their employees are slackers, how's that going to affect the way that they behave toward the employees? When they come in to do an inspection, they're going to be looking for evidence that they were slacking. And when they find that evidence, they're going to point it out in a way that lets the people know that they think they're slackers. And what's that going to do to the employees? It's going to deflate them. It's going to make them think, well, they think I'm just a slacker. Then what happens after that? Some people get motivated by that and say, I'll show them. But a lot of people just say, well, why bother? And so they don't work as diligently. And guess what that does the next time the supervisor comes around? Because if they didn't work as diligently, the supervisor comes around and it reinforces their attitude, their belief that it's a slacker. Where on the other hand, if the supervisor believes that their people are hardworking, conscientious, energetic, fun people to be around, when they come in to do an inspection, how are they going to interact with their people? They're going to come in and they're going to say, all right, let's see what we did today. And they're going to look and check out the room and say, man, that was great. Look at that. Wow, I haven't seen that good a job on that particular thing in a long time. Oh, wait a minute. Look, what do you think you might do differently next time? And let the person say, well, I missed this. Okay, good. Let's figure out how to make that part of your process every time. And they're going to coach. And that employee is going to say, wow, they think I'm great. And they're helping me get better. So I'm going to work harder. The next time the supervisor comes around, what do they see? They did better. Ah, Pygmalion effect. So expectations can be really, really good. The point of all this is that managing expectations means figuring out, are the expectations that I have realistic? Are they helpful? Will they contribute? I want to remove unwarranted moral judgment from my prescriptive, and I want to hold on loosely to my descriptive expectations. And in every case, whatever the relationship, forgive frequently. Forgive frequently. Some very good friends of ours had a plaque up in their house, and when we would go to visit, we'd see the plaque, and I may not have the words exactly right, but it was to this effect. It said, a strong marriage is the happy union of two good forgivers. How's that? Pretty good, huh? A strong marriage is the happy union of two good forgivers. So part of managing your expectations is keeping that forgiveness card in your pocket, right? Forgive frequently. Here are two expectation managing nuggets, extra nuggets, all right? Doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different result is the definition of? We all know it. Right? It's the definition of insanity. So here's a thought. If your expectations are constantly not being met, maybe you should change your approach. Little nugget. Second nugget. Expect the unexpected. That pretty much could sum up everything. Expect the unexpected. Now, our son, Justin, second oldest, used to have a T-shirt that said, doesn't expecting the unexpected make the unexpected the expected? Yes! And that's the point. When you expect the unexpected, everything meets your expectations. Think about that. When you expect the unexpected, everything meets your expectations. Pretty cool. All right, that was the second nugget. Third and final step, briefly. You've come to understand what your expectations are. You figured out where they come from and whether or not they're realistic and good expectations. Now you need to share your expectations. If unmet expectations is the number one killer of any kind of relationship, the most toxic strain of unmet expectations is unspoken expectations. Here's one expectation you can never have, that people will read your mind. How many times has somebody said, with a look of bewilderment on their face, I had no idea they expected that. I had no idea. Often people don't speak out their expectations because they really aren't aware of them. Let me refer you to step one. Run that scenario planning thing with the people and relationships that you have so that you can help to identify what your expectations are. At work, for example, we use sharing expectations. We use employee handbooks. We use policies and procedure manuals. We use rules and responsibilities documents. We use training. We use employee feedback surveys, all to share expectations so that everybody's on the same page as much as possible about what the expectations are. And in interpersonal relationships, typically we just talk and observe to understand what expectations are. Now, may I make a suggestion? Now I want to zero in on one particular category of relationship. The pastor-congregation relationship. For a congregation who is on the verge of installing a new pastor, regardless of who that may or may not be, it might be a good idea for you to think together about and get as many people on the same page as you can about what is Grace Community Church's expectation of the new pastor. What do you expect from him? And what can he expect from you? What commitments are you willing to make to the new pastor? Because guess what? He's going to have expectations too. It goes both ways. Right? So I really, 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 really love that you're doing these home meetings. And it was presented again just a few minutes ago, but let me emphasize one more time. Please take advantage of those. Now, don't go into one of those home meetings with a laundry list saying, okay, these are my expectations. Boom, 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 boom. But use the opportunity of in conversation to think about what can you expect from this person. And ask them, what do they expect from you? Because getting everybody on the same page will do an awful lot to mitigate the potential toxicity of unmet expectations. Let me just close with a couple of expectations that you can fairly have of a new pastor. One is that the new pastor will be different from the previous pastor. Especially if the previous pastor was a founding pastor or was a pastor that was here for a long, long time. There's a saying in the pastor world that the name for the pastor who follows the founding pastor or the long-term pastor is interim pastor. That's not a good thing. That means there's too much comparison going on. The new pastor will be different from the previous pastor. Look for those good differences. Focus on those. A second thing that you can expect is that things will be different going forward from how they were in the past, even if Don winds up being your pastor. Because that relationship before was one way. The relationship after will be another way. Make your expectations descriptive, not prescriptive, and hold them loosely. That relationship will change, and that's okay. It has to. Now, one thing people don't like is change. Am I right? Raise your hand if you just get up every morning looking for what can I change. I just want my whole life to change right now. I want it to be topsy-turvy, upside down, and all of that. Here's one thing you need to know. If Don winds up being your pastor, let's just say that, his whole life is going to change. You're pretty much going to go on doing what you do. Right? I really appreciated one of the deacons who prayed for us when we were installed in our last church. He got this. And when he prayed, he expressed that. He said, Lord, Jim and Susie and their family have left their home. They have moved here. Now, that's not going to happen in this case probably, but they've moved here. Their whole life has been turned upside down to come and serve us. We're all just doing our lives with just this little change that there's a new pastor. Keep that in mind as you think about expectations. Also, you can expect that you'll have no idea how long it's going to take for the new relationship to gel and mature. It takes time. There's going to be a lot of activity. There's going to be hitting the ground running. There's going to be responsibilities handed off here and there. And those are all normal. Those are all appropriate. That's the way it should be. But expect that it's going to take time, and maybe a different amount of time than you expected, for the relationship to gel and mature. Give it that time. Participate in helping with that process. One other thing I want to say, from personal experience as well as from just experience interfacing with pastors all over, is be very, very careful about the expectations you have of your pastor's family. The wife, children, grandchildren are not the pastor. I know of pastor-congregation relationships that were destroyed because the unspoken, unmet expectation of the pastor's wife was X, Y, or Z. How fair is that? It's completely unfair. Nobody said. Now, that didn't happen to us, but we know of people where the pastor left because the church couldn't get over the bitterness of an unspoken, unmet expectation about what the pastor's wife was supposed to do. Just be careful about that. Just be careful about that. And the last comment that I want to make is remember to expect the unexpected. Embrace every relationship with love and forgive frequently. Thank you.